Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, February 9th, 2024, Section A, State and Local News. Economist highlights Midland's growth. Smart Asset study showed city added 3,144 high-income households for a 57.4% increase, by Mella McEwen. Midland's rise in high-income households signals economic growth, yet prompts a closer look at the broader implications for affordability and social equity within the community. A new study from Smart Asset, the online website for consumer-focused financial information and advice, ranks Midland 39th out of 345 of the largest U.S. cities with the most high-income households. High-income households are those making $200,000 or more. The study showed Midland added 3,144 high-income households for a 57.4% increase in the growth of high-income households. The percentage of high-income households in Midland rose from 9.4% in 2021 to 14.8% in 2022. Midland's addition of high-income households between 2021 and 2022 was impressive, economist Ray Perryman commented to the Reporter Telegram by email. As always, with percentages, it's important to consider the size of the population being measured. For areas with few high-income households, the addition of a small number of such households can lead to a large percentage gain, he cautioned. The Texas cities with faster growth in high-income households, Killeen and Edinburgh, started from very small bases and added far fewer than Midland, Perryman added. Midland also stands out in the percentage of Texas households earning $200,000 or more. The cities ranking higher than Midland are almost all affluent suburbs of major metropolitan areas, such as Frisco, The Woodlands, Sugarland, Allen, and Plano. The exception is Austin, which ranks a few percentage points higher. For a relatively small and isolated metropolitan area, the proportion of high-earning households in Midland is notable. It reflects the relatively high income opportunities in the oil and gas industry, as well as expansion in sectors such as healthcare, Perryman concluded. Backyard Midland Ministries Director Carl Borowski, who also operates the Rope Youth Food First campaign in Midland schools, sees the other end of the spectrum. We have people making absolutely nothing, he said. We also have people living in hotels, working two or three jobs, and that doesn't add up to affording a house. Borowski told the Midland Reporter Telegram by telephone that people making higher incomes means costs go up, and not everyone works in the oil field. And Midland's strong economy does price people out of things. One positive for Midland is that, unlike large cities like Austin or Denver, who struggle with homeless populations, the city has, at most, 30 people or less who are street-sleeping homeless, and most of them are homeless by choice, he said. All the news reports about Midland's wealth and high-paying jobs entice people to come to the area. And when people get enticed, that's how you become homeless. Midland is not the place to come and get started, he said. Inside Texas, Midland trails only Killeen, fourth nationwide, with a 146.2 growth rate, and Edinburgh, 32nd, with a growth rate of 65%. Odessa came in at 95 nationwide, with a 32.6% increase in high-income household growth. The report showed Odessa added 680 households, increasing the city's percentages of high-income households from 4.6% in 2021 to 6.1% in 2022. The top cities across the nation, according to Smart Assets study, were Spokane Valley, Washington, 183.3%, Allentown, Pennsylvania, 163.6%, and Evansville, Indiana, 150%. Other West Texas cities included Abilene, ranked 83rd, Amarillo, 102nd, and Lubbock, 237th. Expert fears fine particulates crackdown may hit Permian by Mella McEwen. New standards for fine particulate matter have been announced by the Environmental Protection Agency that will reduce the threshold to 9 micrograms per cubic meter from the current 12 micrograms per cubic meter. While the new threshold is expected to have a more direct impact on Texas' major metropolitan areas like Houston, Austin, Dallas, and much South Texas, there is concern that the impact could spread. This is much more of an industrial Gulf Coast issue for now, Grant Schwarzwalder, president of OTA Environmental Solutions, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. He said this change could impact the development of new factories and petrochemical plants, requiring permits to be redone and projects to be reevaluated from an environmental and regulatory standpoint. I also see this as a continuing assault on industry, like a wave rolling over Texas, Schwarzwalder wrote. It might be more directly affecting one area, but it will hit other areas either directly or indirectly. Schwarzwalder added that the move ties into the discussion surrounding the Permian Basin possibly being redesignated as in non-attainment, not meeting national ambient air quality standards for ozone. Lowering the values makes areas more susceptible to more regulatory oversight, he explained. The new threshold also drew criticism from the Texas Public Policy Foundation, with TPPF officials calling it one of its most dramatic steps to date in its assault on American industry and on affordable, reliable energy by lowering the national standards for fine particulate matter, already among the strictest standards in the world. This standard will impose new restrictions on economic activity across more than three-quarters of U.S. counties and is just the latest example of how the agency is abusing the laws designed to keep our air and water clean for the purpose of stifling economic growth, Chuck DeVore, TPPF's Chief National Initiatives Officer, said in a statement. Just yesterday, a Texas-led coalition secured a legal victory that will require the EPA to undertake additional review of the ozone standards, and Texas will continue to lead liberty-loving states in the fight against the EPA's overreach. Brent Bennett, policy director of TPPF's Life Powered, commented, "The EPA touts that it is following the science, but it continues to brush aside reality in its pursuit of ever more draconian air quality regulations. Particulate levels in the U.S. are already among the lowest in the world, and 60% of the particulates in the U.S. are from natural sources, with only 20% coming from energy consumption and industrial activity. The economic shutdowns during the COVID-19 pandemic showed that taking half the cars off the road and closing businesses and factories had no measurable effect on pollution levels in U.S. cities. But the EPA continues to insist that our air is not safe and that more regulations will make it safer. As many years of research from our team has shown, its rationale is pure fantasy and not based on real science." City to decide on at-large election vote by Ben Schaefer. The Midland City Council will vote February 13th for a special election on May 4th to fill the vacant at-large seat left after the passing of Dan Corrales. City officials reported that state law requires a governing body to hold a special election within 120 days of the vacancy occurring. Following the vote on Tuesday, according to the city, a notice of election will be posted to the City of Midland website once the mayor signs it. Eligible Midland residents then will have the opportunity to file for the seat. The city stated that the filing period is expected to last from February 13th to March 4th. An at-large seat requires that a state candidate run citywide. The city stated that the winner of the election will serve the remainder of the at-large term, which ends in January 2025. If that person wants to run for another term as an at-large council member, they must run again in November, according to the city. If the May 4th election date is approved on February 13th, the at-large election would be on the same day as elections having to do with the Midland Central Appraisal District and a utility district inside Midland County, according to Midland County Elections Office. The last special election in the city was in January 2020, when John Love III resigned to run for U.S. Senate. John Norman won a race to replace Love and represent District 2, the city reported. Words apart. Pulitzer Prize winner Michael Chabon discusses his book, answers questions, and helps promote importance of learning, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Michael Chabon spoke at the Wagner Noel Sunday. As part of One Book, One Basin, a reading program geared towards promoting literacy and community in the Permian Basin, Chabon discussed his book, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, answered questions from audience members, and helped promote the importance of learning in Midland, Odessa. Formed by Randy Hamm, the current Odessa Arts Executive Director, One Book, One Basin creates an opportunity for parents to set an example for their children. Because when children see their parents reading, they're more likely to read. Being able to pull in some authors that wouldn't necessarily come to West Texas through a program like this exposes the community to ideas, people, and themes that we wouldn't normally get because we're isolated out here by ourselves, Hamm told the Reporter Telegram in a previous report. Literacy has remained an issue in the Permian Basin for decades. In 2022, the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin found that 26% of Midland County adults and 36% of Ector County adults read at a second grade level or less. For better or worse, we are beholden to the cycles of a boom and bust economy, Hamm explained. During boom times, you can just walk out the doors of high school, into employment, make more than you can ever imagine, and go straight to work without maybe sitting through education. But then the bust comes and you're out of work. You haven't finished school and you're not reading at the level you need to be reading at to sustain at a job. For all the good things that come out of the boom times, the bust times are the things that hamper our workforce's ability to sustain a job, and that affects our literacy rate. Wintry precipitation possible for weekend forecast, by B.K. Richter. The National Weather Service for the Midland-Odessa area predicts that wintry precipitation is possible for the weekend. We could see some wintry precipitation chances return to portions of the region, the National Weather Service wrote in a social media post on Wednesday. There remains plenty of uncertainty with the forecast, but snowfall accumulations appear little, if any. The National Weather Service predicts that the far northwestern zones have the best chances of seeing any wintry weather. Residents in the area can expect the storm system to arrive late Saturday, with the rain shower chances increasing across the northern zones. As temperatures cool overnight Saturday, snow showers begin to mix in across southeast New Mexico and the northwest Permian Basin, National Weather Service said in a social media post. While the NWS did say precipitation will taper off Sunday afternoon, it did not know if any real snow accumulations will occur. According to Hearst meteorologist Anthony France, the Midland-Odessa region will have a chance of showers early Saturday morning, but most of the day will actually be dry. By late Saturday night, a better chance of a few showers and thunderstorms will enter the Permian Basin, France told the Reporter-Telegram on Thursday. Accumulating snow is possible in parts of the Texas Panhandle, but most of the snow will stay north of the basin. However, France did say that there is a chance of snow mixing with rain in some of the northern Permian Basin cities, such as Hobbs, Seminole, and La Mesa. Snowfall accumulations are not expected, France said. Midland-Odessa will likely be too warm for any snow to mix in with the rain. Low temperatures Sunday morning will be close to 40 degrees. Additionally, the National Weather Service shared a recap of its 2023 weather events for the Permian Basin area. Their website lists extreme weather events for West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. Gas prices fluctuate across state. Drop in West Texas, by Ben Schaefer. Texas gas prices are fluctuating due to fluctuating crude oil prices, AAA reported Thursday. Gas prices in Midland are the highest in the state after a 5-cent weekly increase to $2.94. Gas prices in Odessa dropped by 3 cents, and its average currently sits at $2.88. The statewide gas price average is fluctuating week to week as crude oil, the main ingredient in gasoline, also fluctuates in price, said Daniel Armbruster, spokesperson for AAA Texas. Gas prices remain 23 cents less per gallon on average in Texas compared to this time last year. Although Texas gas prices went up and down in different cities, West Texans generally saw decreases in their local prices. Gas prices in Abilene dipped by 8 cents, and fuel in Amarillo became 10 cents cheaper this week. El Paso, which has been home to the most expensive gas prices in the state, saw its gas prices drop by 17 cents. Gas prices in Lubbock decreased by 12 cents, and fuel prices in San Angelo dropped by 6. Texas is now home to the ninth cheapest fuel in the nation with a $2.82 average. Drivers in Hawaii pay the most, $4.69 on average. Texas man sentenced for drugging wife's drinks to induce an abortion. A Texas man who drugged his wife's drinks in an attempt to induce an abortion was sentenced to 180 days in jail and 10 years on probation. Mason Herring, a 39-year-old Houston attorney, pleaded guilty Wednesday to injury to a child and assault of a pregnant person. He had initially been charged with felony assault to induce abortion. Catherine Herring, who has filed for divorce, told the court the jail sentence was not long enough. She said their 1-year-old daughter, their third child, was born about 10 weeks premature, has developmental delays, and attends therapy 8 times a week. I do not believe that 180 days is justice for attempting to kill your child 7 separate times, Catherine Herring said. Harris County District Attorney Kim Ogg's office did not immediately respond to her request for comment. Mason Herring was sentenced by State District Judge Andrea Beal. Catherine Herring told authorities her husband, in May 2022, began lecturing her on hydration and offering water. She said she became severely ill after drinking from the first cup that appeared cloudy, which her husband explained was perhaps the result of the cup or water pipes being dirty. Catherine Herring became suspicious and began refusing multiple other drinks her husband offered. She later found in the trash packaging for a drug that contained misoprostol, a medicine used to induce abortion. She also gave police videos from hidden cameras she installed at her home where her husband was no longer living. One of them showed him mixing a substance in one of her drinks, Catherine Herring said. Mason Herring's attorney, Dan Cogill, called the plea deal and sentence reasonable. "It's a sad situation, and Mason has accepted his responsibility," Cogill said. Obituaries and death notices. George Samuel Sam Butler. George Samuel Sam Butler, 37, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, February 3, 2024. Sam was born on October 27, 1986, to Scarlett Hides and Corbett Butler. Sam is survived by his wife, Kayla Butler, three sons, Caden Van Meter, Jalen Van Meter, Hagen Butler, and one daughter, Kinsley Butler. His mother, Scarlett Butler Hides, four sisters, Christina Rogers, Rebecca Tippett, Sarah Butler Perez, and Veronica Butler. Two brothers, Brandon Butler and Brian Butler. Sam is preceded in death by his father, Corbett Butler, sister Brandy Butler, three brothers, Aaron Griffin, Jeremiah Butler, and Joshua Butler. There are no arrangements announced at this time. Maria Del Socorro Spencer. Maria Del Socorro Spencer, 73, of Midland, Texas, went to be with God Jehovah on February 2, 2024. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, February 10, 2024, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Maria Del Socorro Spencer was born on April 22, 1950, in Ojinaga, Chihuahua, Mexico, and raised by her parents, Enrique Spencer and Sarah Flote. Maria is survived by her children, Jorge Machuca, Eric Machuca, and Sergio Machuca. She is also survived by her three grandchildren and her siblings, Juan Carlos, Cesar Alfa, Palmera, and Rocio. She is preceded in death by her biological mother, Maria, and by her siblings, Nidia, Laura, and Guillermino. After the service, there will be a celebration of her life at the Sagebrush Event Center, located at 3401 Thomason Drive, Midland, Texas. Karen Barragan. Karen Barragan, 61, of Midland, passed away January 26, 2024. Viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday, February 12, 2024, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Memorial service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, February 13, 2024, at Elevate Church. Dorothy May Walker, age 66, went to be with the Lord on Friday, February 2, 2024, in Midland. A viewing will be held from 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. on Friday, February 9, 2024, at Mayberry Funeral Home. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 10, 2024, at Goodwill Missionary Baptist Church. Interment immediately follows at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Miguel Maskell Jr. Miguel Maskell Jr., 34, of Midland, passed away February 6, 2024. The family will hold a service at a later date in Ozona, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for February 8, 2024, Brother Convicted in Death of Brother, by Kim Smith. An Ector County jury convicted a 50-year-old Odessa man of murder in the May 2022 death of his older brother Thursday. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said the jury sentenced Anthony Jimenez to 15 years in prison. According to court records, Odessa officers went to a medical call around 8:20 a.m. May 26, 2022 in the 800 block of Adams Avenue. When they arrived, they found Jimmy Jimenez Jr., 55, dead, and his brother Anthony present. Jimenez said he'd gotten into a fight with his brother about money, and he confessed to having punched his brother and knocking him down several times, the report stated. He told officers his brother was unconscious and bleeding from his mouth when he fled without calling for help. According to the report, Jimenez said he came home from Amarillo a few days later to find his brother dead. During a search of the home, officers found a bloody hammer in the kitchen, and an autopsy revealed Jimmy Jimenez Jr. had a broken neck, prompting the medical examiner to rule out the death a homicide. Judge Den Wallen presided, Bill Prasher and Courtney Williams prosecuted on behalf of the state, and Brian Cummings represented Jimenez. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for February 5, 2024 by staff report. Midland Rockhounds to host hiring fair ahead of 2024 season. Interested in working for the Midland Rockhounds during the upcoming season? The team is hosting a job fair Saturday, February 24th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Momentum Bank Ballpark. Rockhound staff are aiming to hire part-time, game day, and seasonal hourly positions in stadium operations, concessions, grounds, game entertainment, ticketing, and security. Those hired can work home games and other public events at the ballpark, like annual concerts. Perks for seasonal employees include discounts in the team store and on tickets throughout the season. Hiring age for these positions starts at 14 years old. The Rockhounds follow all state and federal employment age guidelines. Applicants should enter through the main gate near the ticket window and into the Diamond Club area to speak with hiring managers for each department, said Dan Napinski, Director of Operations for the Rockhounds. The Rockhound season begins at home on Tuesday, April 9th, against the Amarillo Sod Poodles. Prior to this, the Rockhounds will host an all-staff meeting to prepare for the season. To learn more and apply, visit the Rockhounds employment page. Find this story in audio for blind and low-vision adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Chevron to bring 750 employees and their families to Jackalope's Ice Wolves game, February 7, 2024, by staff report. The competition will be fierce on the ice and also in the stands when the Odessa Jackalopes battle the New Mexico Ice Wolves at Ector County Coliseum on Friday night. Chevron, a sponsor of the Jackalopes, is bringing more than 750 employees and Chevron family members to the battle between teams from the North American Hockey League's South Division. It's a fitting game for Chevron employees to attend, given the company's operations span West Texas and New Mexico, and that fact has resulted in a wager between Chevron operations from both states that will raise the stakes of Friday's game. If the Jackalopes win, Chevron will donate $5,000 to the Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin, which is based in Odessa and Midland. If the Ice Wolves win, Chevron will donate $5,000 to the University of New Mexico Comprehensive Cancer Center through the University of New Mexico Foundation in Albuquerque. In the end, of course, everyone wins, as the runner-ups organization will receive $2,500 from Chevron. We couldn't have picked a better game to bring our employees and families to, says Chevron MCBU General Manager of Operations Bobby Hullett. I know we are going to have a competitive mix of Jackalopes and Ice Wolves fans in the stands who represent our Texas and New Mexico operations. And what better way is there to celebrate an opportunity like this to give back to these two outstanding community organizations? Good luck to all. Game time is 7:15 p.m. For tickets or more information, visit the Jackalopes website or follow their updates on Facebook. Bush family home to host celebration in honor of President's Day, February 5, 2024, by Mike Aldex. The Bush family home's state historic site in Midland is inviting folks from around the Permian Basin to a celebration in honor of President's Day. The free event will take place Saturday, February 17, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Bush Family Home at 1412 West Ohio Street. Kids and adults can participate in a number of activities, such as snapping photos or pretending to give speeches at the presidential podium. There will also be presidential trivia for youth and adults, including prizes, presidential games, and coloring sheets, and If I Were President activity, and crafts for kids to make a presidential face mask. Although the President's Day holiday is a combined celebration of George Washington's and Abraham Lincoln's birthdays, the Bush Family Home State Historic Site extended its commemoration to include all past presidents. We are excited to plan an event that will be fun for the whole family, site manager Troy Gray said. Of the 45 different men that became president, Midland can claim two. Visiting hours for the Bush Family Home are Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The last tour begins at 4:15 p.m. Visit BushFamilyHome.com. The Bush Family Home only recently became a Texas State Historic Site in April 2022. The Texas Historical Commission, which oversees the historic preservation of 35 other historic sites in the state, accepted the Bush Family family home as its 36th site. Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Permian Basin sees influx of high-income earners, February 5, 2024, by staff report. In 2022, Midland saw a 57.4% increase in growth of high-income households, or those making $200,000 or more, according to a newly released study from SmartAsset.com. In total, 3,144 high-income households were added to Midland that year, which propelled the percentage of those making $200,000 or more from 9.4% of the households in 2021 to 14.8% in 2022, according to the study, which was highlighted by the city. Other Permian Basin cities also saw significant growth, including Odessa, which saw a 32.6% increase, with 680 of these high-income households added. The SmartAsset.com study called Cities Adding the Most High-Income Households ranked 345 of the largest U.S. cities. Midland was ranked 39th in the nation in its percentage of added high-income households in 2022, according to the study. Abilene ranked 83rd with 390 additional high-income households, Odessa ranked 95th, Amarillo was 102nd, 884, and Lubbock was 237th at 1,265. Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Museum hatches inconceivable movie plans for Valentine's Day, February 7, 2024, by Kathy Chateau. Searching for a Valentine's date night that might be inconceivable in its splendor? Consider the Museum of the Southwest showing of the romantic comedy, The Princess Bride. Locals can catch the classic 1987 movie in the museum's Planetarium Dome Theater Wednesday, February 14, 7 to 8:30 p.m. Tickets are free for museum members and $15 per couple for non-members. The doors to the stars open at 6:30 p.m. Moviegoers will recall The Princess Bride features the adventuresome tale of one-time farm girl Buttercup, her presumed deceased true love Wesley, the wicked prince Humperdinck of Florian, and a whole cast of memorable characters wrapped up into a story read by a grandfather to his grandson. The Museum of the Southwest is located at 1705 West Missouri Avenue in Midland. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for February 8, 2024, Brother Convicted in Death of Brother, by Kim Smith. An Ector County jury convicted a 50-year-old Odessa man of murder in the May 2022 death of his older brother Thursday. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said the jury sentenced Anthony Jimenez to 15 years in prison. According to court records, Odessa officers went to a medical call around 8:20 a.m. May 26, 2022 in the 800 block of Adams Avenue. When they arrived, they found Jimmy Jimenez, Jr., 55, dead, and his brother, Anthony, present. Jimenez said he'd gotten into a fight with his brother about money, and he confessed to having punched his brother and knocking him down several times, the report stated. He told officers his brother was unconscious and bleeding from his mouth when he fled without calling for help. According to the report, Jimenez said he came home from Amarillo a few days later to find his brother dead. During a search of the home, officers found a bloody hammer in the kitchen, and an autopsy revealed Jimmy Jimenez, Jr. had a broken neck, prompting the medical examiner to rule out the death a homicide. Judge Den Wallen presided, Bill Prasher and Courtney Williams prosecuted on behalf of the state, and Brian Cummings represented Jimenez.
This is the Life Tributes column. Deidre Carlene Colmia, October 29, 1950 to February 3, 2024. Deidre Carlene Colmia, 73, of Midland, passed away at home on Saturday, February 3rd. A small celebration of life will be held by the family at a later date. Carlene was born on October 29, 1950, in Sweetwater, to Fred A. White and Frida Lee White. She grew up in Sweetwater and lived the majority of her adult life in Odessa, Midland, and Coke County. Carlene is survived by her sons, Jack Colmia, Jr. and wife Krista, Mac Colmia and wife Andrea, her sister and best friend, Jolene McWilliams, and husband Mike. as well as her four grandchildren. Carlene is preceded in death by her mother, Frieda Reed Monroe, her father, Fred A. White, her maternal grandparents, Audley and Edrie Reed, and her paternal grandparents, Floyd and Nita Kaiser. In lieu of flowers, the family requests those who wish to express sympathy to consider donating to their favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Curtis Dean Crabill. Curtis Dean Crabill, 87, of Midland, passed away peacefully at home Tuesday, January 30th. Memorial service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Thursday, February 8th at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Midland. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Kurt was born on April 10th, 1936, in Hutchinson, Kansas, to Floyd William Crabill and Nellie Rose Rulin Crabill. He met Deanna Lorenzo in 1968 while working with ARCO in Bakersfield, California as a landman. They married in Anchorage, Alaska on August 29, 1970, where their two daughters were born. The family moved to Texas in 1979, making their home in Midland since 1976. He is survived by his wife Deanna, son Randy Lee Crabill of Murrieta, California, his and Deanna's two daughters, Catherine Annette Crabill of Houston and Christina Louise Crabill Johnson and husband Clay of Austin, as well as five grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations in Kurt's name may be made to West Texas Boys Ranch and Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Randall Erskine Carter. Randall Erskine Carter, age 65, born on January 25, 1958, in Teague, Texas, passed away on Sunday, January 21st, in Waco. Services were entrusted to Mayberry Funeral Home. Hugo Sanchez Paleo. Hugo Sanchez Paleo, 58, passed away on Monday, February 5th. Viewing will be Wednesday, February 7th from 1 to 9 p.m., with a rosary to begin at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Maria de Jesus Sosa. Maria de Jesus Sosa, 80, of Midland, passed away Thursday, February 1st. She was raised and lived in Midland all of her life. Friends may pay their respects at Ellis Funeral Home on Tuesday, February 6th, from 4 to 8 p.m., and Wednesday, February 7th, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. The rosary will be recited Wednesday at 7 p.m. Mass will be celebrated on Thursday, February 8th at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, followed by interment at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences.
Griffiths not endorsing in March primary. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths is not endorsing in the hotly contested March primaries for County GOP Party Chair or any of the contested precinct chair seats. A Facebook post Sunday stated, Griffiths and Odessa Fire and Rescue Chief Jason Cotton were endorsing Odessa City Councilwoman Denise Swanner, who is seeking to be precinct chair in Precinct 206. The Facebook page later cited a misunderstanding about the Griffiths endorsement and then later removed Cotton's endorsement with no explanation and then later deleted the entire post. Fake news sites on social media and fake Facebook profiles have played a part in this year's Republican primary, with 16 mostly newcomers challenging a group of mostly appointed precinct chairs along with a contested Ector County party chair seat, two county commissioner seats, and a justice of the peace slot. The two groups essentially line up with those supporting incumbent GOP chair Tisha Crow and those who support her challenger Donna Kelm. The fake Facebook accounts have attacked Kelm and her supporters in recent weeks, including Swanner's opponent Worthen, who said the fake Facebook account Josiah Vargas has repeatedly attacked her. Swanner is listed as a friend on the fake account and has posted replies to the account. Swanner is facing longtime Odessan Brenda Worthen. The nastiness on Facebook is something that has affected many of the Kelm candidates, Tracy Gregston said. Gregston supports Kelm and is running in Precinct 202 for precinct chair against appointed incumbent Brandon Pugh. A lifelong Republican and Odessan, Gregston said she hates the tone of this year's primary campaign, especially since we are all Republicans. She said tactics being used by the Crow Group includes spinning and demeaning. They, the Crow Group, are the ones acting like Democrats, Gregston said. We are good people. There is nothing wrong with us, and we actually want to do the job. Gregston said she was offended by a recent letter a number of precinct chair candidates supported by Crow sent out, and a note from Crow at the bottom of the letter urging voters not to fall for trans Republicans. She will call me a Democrat or a trans Republican. Really? We don't want to sit around and bash people. We just want to do the job. Gregston said the job is not currently being done in her precinct, as she had trouble finding where to vote when some voting locations were changed several years ago. I would have, as precinct chair, sent out information to my precinct that voting locations were changing. That is part of the job. Gregston has also been attacked on Facebook and has had her daughter. She said the bullying is off the charts. The fake news of endorsement is not the first. Crow in December posted, along with fake news sites, State Senator Kevin Sparks had endorsed her candidacy. Sparks, however, said he was not endorsing in this or any other local race. He texted, "Both candidates have been very active in Ector County for many years. The community needs to make their election without undue influence." He said he is not endorsing either candidate and does not intend to endorse in local races ever. Kelm has said her hope is to get the Ector County GOP back on track. She said that means an end to Crow's time as the head of the party. Kelm said she is against the tactics being used, including endorsing one Republican over another in local races and the use of fake social media accounts to attack Odessans who questioned the local GOP. Kelm herself was treated harshly at the ECRP headquarters after she refused to block walk for candidates she did not know. Kelm wants to create an environment where candidates feel free to run without being intimidated and will speak out against executive board members who lash out and bully candidates they oppose. Kelm worked for more than a month to secure three signatures from current Ector County precinct chairs so she could get a spot on the ballot to challenge longtime leader Crow. The signatures were required under Texas legislation that originally passed to keep Democrats from grabbing powerful seats by running for local party chair spots. Crow and her supporters have long said it is the law, and challengers must get 10% of the local party chairs to sign to even get on the ballot. However, the statute also detailed that counties under a certain population may opt out of the required 10% in signatures. Midland County has done just that, but Crow and her precinct chairs have not. Many of the current precinct chairs were appointed by Crow or have never faced an opponent. That changes this March, as local businessman Ronnie Lewis gathered a number of Odessans to challenge the city precinct chairs for control of the party. Crow and her people have sought to paint him as a Democratic operative, but Lewis said he is a Republican and just wants civility back and for the bullying of Odessans by top leadership of the local GOP to stop. He cites how fake Facebook accounts are used to intimidate and bully anyone who doesn't agree with everything they are doing. Earlier this year, several fake profiles were used to disparage Lewis and his wife. The fake profiles, Finnegan Lane, Josiah Vargas, Mitt Harvey, Joshua Benjamin, and others routinely denigrate Lewis and others. Lewis will face Carmen Wilhite in the primary. She was appointed to her precinct chair late last year. Early voting begins February 20th, and Election Day is March 5th.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, February 3rd. Energy's impact on Texas' economy broke records in 23, but that performance may not continue. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Texas oil and gas producers shattered records in 2023, paying $26.3 billion in state and local taxes and state royalties. That bested the previous year, which also set records, by over $1.5 billion. But that unprecedented blockbuster performance is not guaranteed to continue, warned Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, as the group released its annual Energy and Economic Impact Report. Quote, "We cannot take for granted that this industry can continue to rewrite its record book in the face of federal policies blatantly designed to undermine progress. Delayed permits, canceled pipeline projects, closed and delayed federal leasing programs, and incoherent regulations hurt American consumers and stifle our ability to deliver energy freedom and security around the world," Staples said during a media call to discuss the report. Asked how he could reconcile such a comment with the fact the U.S., Texas, and the Permian Basin have set records for oil production, he responded those milestones were achieved, quote, "in spite of federal policies. Much of the investment driving these gains has been years in the making. As good as things are today, all of that is at risk as the impact of current policies take effect," end quote. Staples specified the Permian Basin has its own challenges to continued growth, specifically the need for additional takeaway capacity and access to electricity as more and more energy companies turn to electrification of their equipment. Quote, "Texas needs pipelines and cost-effective power generation that puts the customer first and incentivizes dispatchable energy," he said. "The state itself must compete with other states that are leading in carbon capture and sequestration and prove its commitment to CCS and providing low-carbon fuels to the markets that are demanding low-carbon or zero-carbon fuels." Still, Staples said the unmatched economic gains fueled by the state's energy industry and its global leadership in producing energy are to be celebrated. Quote, "This does not happen by accident," he said. "This is due to the nonstop technological innovation and commitment of the industry," end quote. According to the report, Texas oil and gas industry paid $26.3 billion in state and local taxes and state royalties, or $72 million daily, that funds education, infrastructure, and first responders. State and local sales taxes rose by $1.6 billion in fiscal year 2023. Property taxes rose $1.8 billion during fiscal year 2023. The Permanent School Fund and Permanent University Fund each received $1.8 billion. Texas school districts received $2.8 billion in property taxes. Midland Independent School District received $205 million, 48% of its tax base. Pecos Barstow Toya ISD received $275.2 million. Texas counties received $886 million in property taxes. Midland County received $34.6 million, 49% of its total tax base. Reeves County ranked first with $98.9 million. Energy firms urged to join LPC Conservation Bank. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. There's a new bank in the Permian Basin, but its currency is land, not money. Conservation banks that aim to help preserve the lesser prairie chicken while also allowing for responsible development of energy have received approval from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as part of a range-wide habitat conservation plan. Quote, "We have two plans, one for renewable energy and one for oil and gas," said Wayne Walker, a rancher in the San Angelo Ozona area, while visiting Midland to encourage participation from oil and gas companies. Quote, "Renewable companies are lining up to participate. We need similar interest from oil and gas," he continued. The Lone Star award-winning rancher said he believes the program will not only provide legal assurances to the industry as it works to develop resources, but will also help the birds. "The plan will give energy producers legal assurances to develop their resources while also contributing to the main conservation goals for the bird, securing conservation strongholds and habitat restoration. Participants can buy protections for priority habitat strongholds secured by conservation banks and potentially other mitigation options. In order to participate in the Conservation Bank program, ranchers have to cut their grazing rates to keep grass cover suitable for the prairie chickens' use. This means cattle have to be moved more frequently and more land is required to feed their herds, all of which increases their operations costs. Moreover, ranchers also have to permanently protect their ranches using conservation easements, permanently removing development rights. This includes surface uses like wind and solar farms, commercial and residential buildings, or farming. Walker called it a market-based model that pays market rates for conservation easements. Quote, "The only way out of this mess is to help landowners and the bird," said Walker. "We have to pay enough for ranchers to reduce their grazing rates and move their herds and also turn away the solar, wind, and oil and gas development guys who show up. They can keep ranching and serve the birds," end quote. The hurdle to acceptance, particularly from oil and gas companies, is their participation in legacy conservation plans, such as the one administered by the Western Alliance of Fish and Wildlife Agencies until its permit was revoked by the FWS. Quote, "These are programs heavily supported by oil and gas, and they're cheaper than us," acknowledged Walker. "Cheap doesn't always translate to good. The money hasn't been enough to get the right conservation plan in the right place," end quote. Because the Conservation Bank already has FWS approval, Walker said his Conservation Bank can find the landowners with land in or near prime lesser prairie chicken habitat. Quote, "We can then go to the FWS, tell them their requirements have been met, and approve. We bank the credits and sell the credits so companies are compliant. It's a private capital approach," end quote. As a bonus, he said, participating in the Conservation Bank lets companies demonstrate their commitment to corporate environmental, social, and governance objectives. The bird needs 25,000 contiguous acres in order to have a viable population, and Walker said the immediate goal is to stabilize its population at 1 to 5% of its peak and then grow it back. The HCP will be administered by LPC Conservation LLC, a special purpose entity owned by Common Ground Capital LLC of Oklahoma City, Restoration Systems of Raleigh, North Carolina, Riverbank Conservation of Austin, and a global private investment firm.
This is the Dear Abby column. Extramarital affair threatens woman's mental health. Dear Abby, I have been involved with a married man for the last 5 years. He lied to me about his status. He told me that a woman he'd had a 15-year relationship with had left him. I recently learned he has been with her for more than 30 years, and she's the mother of his kids. I have tried to walk away many times, but I always go back. I don't blame him, but I am very hurt by the deceptions. I have been hospitalized for depression 3 times since I've been with him. I'm not a homewrecker. He's not a demon. I just need help. I can't go on like this. My mental health is deteriorating rapidly now. Please help me. Signed, Heartbroken in Maryland. Dear Heartbroken, you are stuck in a self-defeating cycle that isn't going to change. In my book, this married man is a demon. He is an awful person with no conscience. Seeing the effect this affair has had on you, 3 hospitalizations for depression, if he had any conscience at all, he would have ended it. If you don't have a licensed mental health professional to talk with to help you disentangle yourself permanently from this destructive cycle, please ask for a referral to one now, before you have to be hospitalized again. Dear Abby, I was a devoted son. I called and visited my parents regularly and took them on trips with my family. I have 2 grown kids I seldom see or hear from. Some of my friends tell me their kids are the same. Is this common with this generation, or is it an anomaly? Signed, Wondering in Florida. Dear Wondering, it may be more common today. Whether because of insensitivity, the fact that younger people face more challenges and distractions than previous generations, or some unresolved resentment toward their parents, I can't say. But your problem seems to have become less unusual over the last several decades. Phone calls have been replaced by texting. But texts lack the warmth and immediacy of verbal communication that former generations enjoyed. Could that be what you are missing? Dear Abby, I have a wonderful husband and 4 beautiful kids. But lately, I've started crushing on his best friend, and I sometimes fantasize about him. I love my husband with all my heart, and I'm truly happy with our marriage. How can I rid myself of these feelings? I don't know what they mean. Signed, Mystified in Missouri. Dear Mystified, it means you are human. A way to control your fantasies would be to quit feeling so guilty about having them. You are far from the only woman to develop crushes on unattainable men. Fan clubs for actors and television personalities come immediately to mind. The time to worry and possibly seek professional help would be when the crush starts having a negative effect on your marriage. You say you love your husband. If that's true, show him the respect he deserves by reminding yourself not to follow through on those fantasies. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 800-460-9069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.